Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and today we're listening back to a town hall forum I co-moderated last night at City Springs Elementary Middle School. It was organized by the Baltimore Education Coalition, and members of the City Springs debate team took part in a discussion. But in this hour, we're going to listen to conversations with three Democratic gubernatorial candidates.
They didn't choose the panel. Missouri Battle is at the end. Greater Homewood Corporation holding up the signs, making sure the candidates know what they're supposed to stop. Karen DeCamp from the Greater Homewood Community Corporation. Sue Fothergill from the City Neighbors Foundation. And some guy named Mark Steiner, who's here as well. We are going to begin, of course, this evening with Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown. As a brief introduction, Lieutenant Governor Anthony Brown was elected to the Maryland House of Delegates, representing the 25th District in Prince George's County in 1998, rose to the ranks to become Majority Whip in 2000, and in 2006, then Delegate Brown was tapped by then Baltimore City Mayor Martin O'Malley to run with him as Lieutenant Governor, where he has served for the last almost 8 years in the office focusing on education and health care. And it's good to have you here, Lieutenant Governor.
Lieutenant Governor Brown, thank you for being here this evening. We're going to start with education funding for our first question. Maryland has a state education formula that is designed to provide funding for schools to ensure all students will succeed, regardless of where they live. It is based on principles of equity and adequacy. Baltimore City Schools gets almost 70% of its funding from the state because the formula takes into account the city's more limited ability to contribute. Over the next 2 years, the education funding formula is going to be reviewed and updated as part of the adequacy study. This review process is to include taking into consideration the needs of children living in areas of high poverty and what they need to succeed. Your first question, what are your views about the upcoming education adequacy study and the principles of adequacy and equity in the formula as it relates to students across the state, including here in Baltimore?
Great. Thank you for the question. How's everybody doing this evening? Good. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here with the Baltimore Education Coalition. I thank you, the parents, the educators, the advocates, for your commitment to our students, your commitment to our schools, and the difference that your advocacy, your work, and your commitment make for our students. You know, let me start answering that question by telling you a little bit something about myself. I'm a first-generation American. My father was raised by his grandmother in Kingston, Jamaica, in a poor community called Jonestown. And my father grew up in a loving, caring home. He went to school. He was tidy. He came home. He did his homework. He focused as a grandson and as a student. My father made it out of poverty in Jonestown and came to this country because my father beat the odds. There's no child in Baltimore City or no child in Maryland that should climb the ladder of opportunity by beating the odds. We can do better than that. We've got to ensure equity funding in every neighborhood school, in every community, in the city of Baltimore, in every county in the state of Maryland. That's our responsibility. That's why I was proud as a member of the General Assembly many, many, many years ago when we established the Thornton Bridge to Excellence funding formula, equity in educational funding for our schools. It was under this administration, the O'Malley-Brown administration, where for the first time we fully funded that equity funding formula when we funded the Geographic Cost of Education Index, where Baltimore City and Prince George's County, in addition to six other counties, but those two jurisdictions, the largest beneficiaries. Today, we invest 35% more in our schools than we did in 2007. The problem is, back in 2002 or so, when we passed the Thornton formula, we said we need to update it in 2012. 2012 has come and it's gone, and we haven't done that work. In this year's budget, there's $800,000 to perform the adequacy funding for our schools. It's long overdue, and I support it and that we get it done now. In that, we need to be looking at, and I know we'll be talking more tonight about pre-K education. We need to look at that. We need to look at not only maintenance of effort and what counties and the city of Baltimore have done in past years, but we need to look at the potential of what counties and the city can do going forward. Because the truth of the matter, in this great state of ours, and there's a debate in Annapolis about this, there are some counties who have much more capacity to invest in education and in other programs that serve communities, but they're not tapping fully into the capacity. In Baltimore City, you are. You're tapping into your capacity. That capacity is not necessarily enough, and that's why the state has the level, the high percentage that it does. We've got to look across the state and ask that question. Is every county, as well as the city of Baltimore, doing its level best to leverage its resources, the wealth in money, the wealth in talent, the wealth in assets and infrastructure to deliver the very best education for their students? That study is long overdue. It's in this year's budget, and the completion date is 2016. As your next governor, it's my hope that without being too hasty, we can accelerate that study and not have to wait until the end of next year for the results.
What is your view of the level of state support needed for school children from counties with much less local wealth?
And again, that is part of it. If a county has less wealth, this is one Maryland. And regardless of where you live, every child in Maryland deserves access to a world-class education, and a big piece of that is funding. So if we have communities and counties in the state of Maryland that do not have that wealth, those resources, we need a funding formula that accounts for that. This state is great because of every county and the city of Baltimore that contributes to our greatness. So we need to ensure that as a state, our funding formulas reflect the contributions and the greatness of every local jurisdiction. Look, I believe that whether you live in Baltimore City or not, I don't, but I claim Baltimore City as my city because I'm a Marylander. This is the home of our history. That's an applause line, sure. It's the home of our history, our culture, our heritage. It's our commercial center, the home to our legal community. Baltimore City is our city regardless of where you live in the state of Maryland, and that's why we have to support students in Baltimore City like every other student around the state.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. So the next question is about facilities for schools. Baltimore City has the oldest school buildings in the state, many of them having been built more than 50 years ago and are rated in poor condition. The Baltimore Education Coalition has worked very hard to pass the 21st Century School Construction Program, which will fund the renovation or replacement of approximately one quarter of Baltimore's decrepit school buildings, so about 35 of 136 buildings. Funding has not yet been identified to renovate the remaining 100 buildings, which have been evaluated by professionals to be in poor condition, many without air conditioning, science labs, and other necessities. So the question for you is, what steps might you take to address the other 100 city school buildings that are not covered under this program, and what funding streams might be used for this?
Sure. Thank you. First of all, let me say that I believe firmly that strong communities are built and they're not born, and that strong communities are built on the foundation of strong neighborhood schools. And we strengthen our schools when we provide modern, technology-ready classrooms and facilities for the educators and the students in that school. When we have modern and technology-ready facilities, we will attract the best and the most qualified teachers and education support professionals to those schools. When we provide modern and technology-ready classrooms, we give those quality and qualified educators an opportunity to deliver a quality education to every student in that building. Strong communities are built on the foundation of strong neighborhood schools, and they are strengthened with modern technology-ready classrooms. And that is why I'm excited about the work that we've done together over the last 7 years. Many of you remember the COP Commission. The recommendation was to fund school construction at $250 million a year for 8 years, and we'd be home free. Well, when the governor and I arrived in Annapolis, in January of 2007, nobody was hitting the $250 million a year mark. Our average investment over the last 7 years has been $340 million with our high water mark at $400 million. I was pleased to be able to support your mayor, our mayor, the city delegation, the city council, to support a $1.1 billion investment in Baltimore City Schools, which will renovate 35 classrooms from now until 2018. So what's next?
Yeah. That's,
what's next for the next three quarters?
That's definitely what we want to hear.
Absolutely. In December, and go to anthonybrown.com under Visions. Now, it's tucked away. It's under Career Technology Education, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But go there. We rolled out in the beginning of December our plan to move from $340 million a year, which is what we've been averaging, to $500 million a year so we can meet the needs of Baltimore City. Montgomery County's down because they've got a growing system. Prince George's County is underfunded, and Baltimore County is right behind all three of us. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be able to meet phase two in Baltimore City unless we move to $500 million a year. I've got a plan to do that. How are we going to do that? We're going to do it by leveraging our AAA bond rating. We're one of only a handful of states that have weathered the Great Recession, this protracted recovery, with a AAA bond rating. That gives us the ability to invest in infrastructure, to invest in our schools, also to invest in things like the Port of Baltimore, where we'll be the one of only two ports that can accommodate large ships coming from the Panama Canal in 2016, and that's why Amazon decided to locate a warehouse at the Port of Baltimore and create 1,600 jobs. It's going to be investing in infrastructure, leveraging our AAA bond rating. We've got debt capacity as we are recovering, albeit a slow recovery. We are going to leverage that debt in a responsible way to fund phase two of this two-phase Baltimore City school replacement and renovation program. That's how we're going to do it. AnthonyBrown.com.
Lieutenant Governor, Baltimore City already provides pre-K for all the children here, full-day pre-K. The state doesn't give any money. The city doesn't give any money. The school system is doing it because they want to better prepare our kids for what comes next. So the question is, you've proposed an expansion of state-supported pre-K that would eventually lead to universal pre-K for all in the state, full-day pre-K. So do you think that putting per-pupil funding for pre-K into the state education funding formula is the way to go, is the way to make sure that the state funds students in all the other grades?
Yes, and let me walk you through that. But first, let me sort of articulate my vision, my view on this. I believe that we will build a better Maryland for more Marylanders, where every Marylander can experience the greatness that is our state. So when we say that Education Week magazine says we have the number one schools in the nation, and that's the ranking that we get, that's not good enough unless every child, whether they're educated in Baltimore City or Bethesda Chevy Chase or anywhere else, has access to a world-class education. And that means investments in early childhood education. It means a highly qualified teacher in the front of every classroom. It means, in addition to more STEM options, more career technology education options as well. It means better alignment and using data to do this, to align our high schools with our two-year colleges with our four-year colleges, and making college more affordable. That's how we're going to ensure a world-class education. There is a difference between a student who enters kindergarten with an 8,000-word vocabulary and a 3,000-word vocabulary. We see that difference on display in kindergarten. We evaluate it by fourth grade, and by the time the 8,000 and the 3,000 vocabulary students graduate, their educational experience and their career opportunity are markedly different. Pre-K education closes that gap. I rolled out a plan. It was the first plan I rolled out on the campaign trail. AnthonyBrown.com. Go to Visions. It's there. It spells it out. But we're talking about expanding universal pre-K to every Maryland four-year-old, regardless of a family's ability to pay. Now, half day by 2018, we can do that with existing state revenues. It's only a 2% increase in our education budget. We can do that. When we go to universal full day, and my plan is by 2022, that's a bigger lift. In the adequacy study that we talked about in response to the first question, in that study will be, how do we get to universal full day pre-K for every Maryland four-year-old, where I would envision a more traditional funding model shared between state and city, state and county, like we do have for K through 12, so that the city isn't bearing the lion's share of that pre-K education. Right now, we've got a capacity issue, both in terms of educators and facilities. So the other thing that you'll see in my proposal is I do partner with, I rely on the existing network of nonprofit early childhood educators. They're out there. They're providing outstanding educational services and opportunities to our three-year-olds and four-year-olds. Let's not discount them and discard them. Let's build on what they're doing well. But regardless, whether the child is in a public building or publicly funded in a nonprofit pre-K, we're going to ensure that whoever's at the front of that classroom is a highly qualified early childhood educator. That's why my plan also has scholarship opportunities for our students that want to go into early childhood education. So there are a number of components to this program. It's doable. Half day by 2018, very doable. Full day by 2022, a bigger lift. But that's why I'm running for governor, and that's why I need your support.
So, then how important is full-day pre-K for kids from low-income families, and how's the state going to fund it?
Listen, the evidence is right here. In 2011, when you went to full day in Baltimore City, the next year, we saw a dramatic improvement in how those pre-Ks did when they got to kindergarten. So it's very important. It's important because not only for the students, for the little four-year-olds, and because they're now in a classroom setting, they're learning how to take instruction and those soft skills, but they're also boosting their vocabulary and the other learning opportunities there. And we know that full day is also important for working families. It's hard to do half day, I understand. So some people say, I don't like your half day by 2018. We got to, you know the concept. It's crawl, walk, and run. We will be running by 2022. But I want every Maryland four-year-old to be ready to learn by the time they're 5 years old and in kindergarten, and we got to make sure we got the capacity, teachers, educators, and facilities to do this. So we're going to crawl, walk, and run so we get to universal full-day pre-K by 2022.
So as a quick follow-up, so everybody's clear. So are you saying that putting per-pupil funding for pre-K into the state education funding formula will wait until 2022? Is that
no.
What you, I want to be clear
no.
about what you're
no,
saying.
No, that's right. Thank you. We're doing the adequacy study now. By the end of 2015, unless we can accelerate it, the study will be complete with recommendations. I would envision then that in the legislative session of 2016, if not before, we will begin acting on those recommendations. There will be recommendations, no doubt, for funding universal pre-K. And I believe that the funding formula is going to point us in the direction of a more traditional model, a shared responsibility between state and local government or local school boards as we currently have for K through 12. So, no, it won't wait till 2022.
Lieutenant Governor, it's time for your closing statement. I'm sorry.
As a parent like you, I am committed to the success of my children in school. My children, I've got a 19-year-old, it's now at College Park, 14-year-old son, a 13-year-old son, and I've tried to give them all the resources and the opportunities as a parent so that they succeed. As a public official, my commitment is to partner with you so that together we can ensure that every student in Maryland, like my father, like your parents, like what we've enjoyed and what we hope for our children, the success for all of Maryland's children. That's my commitment as a public official. I've had the opportunity to travel this great state of Maryland. And whether in Oakland, in the Western Maryland, or Ocean City, here in Baltimore, or where I wake up every morning in Prince George's County, families want the same thing for their children. They want to live in a safe neighborhood with great schools and a clean environment, access to quality medical care. We all want to live in a society that is just, with a justice system that is fair. That's what we fight for every single day. We've increased our investments in the Baltimore City public schools over the last 7 years. And you know what? We have seen a return on that investment. And again, that's why I thank you. When you look at the progress that is measured in fourth grade reading and math, in eighth grade reading and math, our students are performing better today than they were 7 years ago, and much better. Now, there are some that have beaten up on Baltimore City in the past, and there may be others that want to point out that, well, we're not quite where we need to be. We're making progress, but nobody sitting in this room believes that we're done with the work that needs to be done. So as a parent and as a public official, my commitment is to partner with you to make sure that every child in the state of Maryland, here in Baltimore City, and anywhere else around the state has access to a world-class education. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to come by this evening.
Thanks very much, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. And today we're listening back to a town hall forum I co-moderated last night at City Springs Elementary Middle School. It was organized by the Baltimore Education Coalition. And next up, we hear from Maryland Attorney General Doug Gansler.
Doug Gansler has spent his career protecting Maryland seniors, children, and families, first as Assistant U.S. Attorney, then as Montgomery County's State's Attorney, and now as Attorney General. As Attorney General, he has supported marriage equality, DREAM Act, and securing $1.5 billion in foreclosure relief to help keep Maryland families in their homes. Let me introduce Attorney General Doug Gansler.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Good to see you.
You can start right here. And why don't you use this?
Attorney General Gansler, welcome, and thank you for being here. We're going to start with our first question is going to focus on education funding. So in Maryland, we have a state education formula that is designed to provide funding for schools to ensure all students will succeed regardless of where they live. It is based on the principles of adequacy and equity. Baltimore City Schools gets almost 70% of its funding from the state because the formula takes into account the city's more limited ability to contribute. Over the next 2 years, the education funding formula is going to be reviewed and updated as part of the adequacy study. This review process is to include taking into consideration the needs of children living in areas of high poverty to ensure that they have what they need to succeed. So your first question. What are your views about the upcoming education adequacy study and the principles of adequacy and equity in the formula as it relates to students across the state and here in Baltimore?
Well, thank you for having me, and we'll get to that in 1 second. I want to I couldn't stand on the side of the stage and not address Eric. I don't know if he left. That was what I got to listen to. There's Eric. So here's the deal. You missed lacrosse in your talk about what sports you want to play, but we would love to have you. I started an inner-city league here in Baltimore called Charm City Youth Lacrosse about 6 years ago. We have about 400 kids. In that, we play Carroll Park on Saturday mornings because Baltimore was an underserved community as far as lacrosse. And why does that matter? Because when some of the schools outside of Baltimore play each other, when Calvert Hall plays St. Paul's, for example, there's 48 kids on the field that are already committed to college, some of whom are in ninth grade. And Baltimore City was left out of that equation. So we started this, and it's free, and I would love to have you come on Saturday mornings. Also, I want to thank CLIA for being here. Our office, I'm the Baltimore candidate in this race. You may not have known that yet, but you will. I come here, we're here every day, and we've actually been sponsoring. I know CLIA is part of the coalition. We've been working with CLIA for the last few years, and it's a great program, and thank you for allowing us to be part of that. While we're talking about mentoring, because that's really what education is about, and I know there's some teachers in the room, a lot of teachers in the room, and I think that that's the way for success, to have one teacher at a time per child to bring people up. And we started something called Badges for Baseball here in Maryland, working with underserved communities to have positive relationships with law enforcement and students. We also, in terms of mentoring, we also brought Year Up, helped bring Year Up to Baltimore City to help high school kids get jobs, and a number of other mentoring relationships. And I think that's critical to the whole thing, because when you're talking about funding, and now I'm going to answer your question, and I'm going to see the numbers. I know there's numbers, not letters. Funding for buildings and funding for education is obviously the one thing we need to make sure we continue to do and enhance. And we need to make sure that we address the problems that we have here in Baltimore City in particular. And so this school is wonderful. And we have, you know, we need to make sure that we have more conversion charter schools and public charter schools, as well as enhance and support all of our public schools here in Baltimore, because it's been left behind. It's been left behind in the sense that we have the number two minority achievement gap in the United States. So people will literally stand in front of you and say, we've got the number one schools in the country. Well, then they got caught sort of cooking the books in terms of who was taking the tests, but we still have the number two minority achievement gap in the country. And we need to actually not sit around for 7 years and let that happen, but we need to address it. And tonight, hopefully I'll have an opportunity to talk about some of the programs we're going to do. But in terms of funding, we got the $1 billion for the new schools. We need to make sure we get phase two funded as well. And I'm going to fight as your governor to make sure that happens so we get funding for all the schools in Baltimore City, because you can't say to the child.
Attorney General.
Yes.
Hi. If you don't mind, I do want to ask you, I want to ask a follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Your views on the level of state support needed for children from counties from much less, from counties that have lower wealth. So the issue of adequacy and equity in the funding formula.
So we need that, obviously we have maintenance of effort around the state, but we also need to have adequacy in funding for all the underserved communities. And there are, it's not just Baltimore City, there's other areas. 70% of the students that graduate from Prince George's County high schools that go to college, 70% of those students need remedial education when they show up in college. So it's not just Baltimore that needs to have that funding, but as part of the formula, it has to be considered, that has to be a major factor in the consideration for funding.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Great. The next area that we want to talk about with you is facilities, school facilities. Baltimore City, as you know, has the oldest school buildings in the state, many of them having been built over 50 years ago and are rated in poor condition. The Baltimore Education Coalition worked really hard to pass the 21st Century School Construction Program that you just referenced, and will fund the renovation and replacement of approximately one quarter of Baltimore's decrepit school buildings, about 35 of 136 buildings. Funding has not yet been identified, as you said, to renovate the remaining 100 buildings. They've been evaluated by professionals to be in poor condition, many without air conditioning, science labs, other necessities.
Drinkable water?
Yeah, all of that. So, And I'm a parent, so I feel it. Question two for you on that is, what steps might you take to address the other 100 buildings that are not touched under the new program, and what funding streams might be used for this?
So the steps I take, the short answer is we'll fight for it and make sure it happens, because every school in the city should have that, and you can't tell children that how important education is and then not have adequate facilities for them to show up at school to learn in. Obviously, I'm very concerned with what goes inside of the schools as well, and in terms of who are the teachers and making sure that they have the resources available. But in terms of funding streams, that's a big problem in the state of Maryland. So our economy and our jobs is a huge problem right now. We are losing our jobs to our neighboring states, and so when the delegates and the senators go to Annapolis, they face a $1 billion deficit every year. Virginia, right across the river, for example, has a $1 billion rainy day fund because they focused on jobs. Jobs, we've lost 7,000 small businesses in the last 7 years. We've got 76% more people unemployed than we had 7 years ago. We have four Fortune 500 companies left in our state, and we've had 40 straight tax increases in the casinos coming in to try to solve the problem. So what we really need to do is focus on bringing jobs back to Maryland. The reason why we need to bring jobs back to Maryland is to increase our tax base. And I was the first governor candidate and statewide elected official to come out for increasing the minimum wage. It's the fair thing to do. It's the right thing to do. But we need to make sure that we bring cybersecurity, life sciences, manufacturing back to Maryland, our tech training. That is, we have great ideas conceived of here because we have the most dollars coming into the state, yet we don't produce our products here. All of that needs to happen so we can increase our economy, we can and have a bigger tax base so we can do things like fund the schools. And so that's one of the things we've been focused on.
Yeah, and one thing we'd like you to address is sort of what's your sense of the timing on how do we get to that next 100 buildings in Baltimore that are crumbling now, and specifically address some of the funding streams that you see being able to cover that.
Well, I just mentioned the biggest one, which is to sort of change the economy and have a pro-jobs economy here in Maryland. And I think another sort of a more immediate way of going at it is some of the procurement issues. So we have about $18 billion in government contracts that there's neither competition. I mean, if you look at what happened sort of with the Affordable Care Act rollout, for example, when we did single sourcing, no competition, we ended up using a company from Fargo, North Dakota, and it cost us $261 million for a website that was a debacle. Can you imagine having that money to help build schools? So we need to be more competitive, and we need to make sure we have transparency so that some of these government contracts, we can make a much more efficient system so we can save money and use it for things like building schools in the second phase. In terms of the timing of it, I think that's something, you know, we'd have to work with the legislature on it. We have to make sure that we're ready for those buildings. We have to build the first 35 and then have the money ready and allocate it and get bonds sold and so forth to get ready for it. But it has to be a priority. Because, you know, I talk to people in Montgomery County and Howard County and elsewhere about the fact that we have this minority achievement gap, we have this problem in Baltimore City in terms of our schools, and the reason why they should care is because they're paying for it. And so that's one of the considerations that we need to focus on.
Thank you.
All right.
You're up, Mark.
Attorney General, how are you?
You'll do great.
Good.
Just pretend they're all carrots. Yeah.
So we can talk about pre-K. Right now you're in Baltimore City. Baltimore City provides full-day pre-kindergarten for all of its kids because they know the full-day funding prepares our kids for what comes next and strengthens kids when they get to kindergarten. And increased participation is by helping working parents. Now, the state and city don't provide any funding. It's all coming out of the school system budget. And your campaign has proposed expanding pre-K by changing the eligibility guidelines so that more middle-income families can be eligible for the half-day program that's now required of low-income families, and expanding full-day pre-K for low-income families. So if you're governor, what's your view about putting per-pupil funding for pre-K into the state education formula in the same way the state does funding for every other student, all the other grades?
Yeah, and the reason why I was the first candidate for governor, the first statewide elected official to come out for increasing pre-K from half day to full day and have it fully funded by the state was to address this very issue of the schools and the gap, the achievement gap that we have. And so while I want to have universal voluntary pre-K around the state, and I understand that's an admirable goal and a laudable goal, and it's something that I talked about from the very beginning, my biggest focus is on the underserved communities, because that's where when a child shows up to school with a 3,000-word vocabulary as opposed to an 8,000 to 10,000-word vocabulary, they're behind and they'll never catch up. And so our plan is, at least in the short term, is to have it available for incomes of 300% above the federal poverty line and below to actually address the issue that we're trying to address through the expansion of pre-K. The way it was originally deemed to be funded was when they would change from the slot machines to table gaming, the money was supposed to be used for that. It was right in the bill to expand pre-K from half day to full day. They did the never mind, took it out at the end, and now we don't have that funding. So that's we need to do that right away. You can't just say, let's make voluntary pre-K all day, all over the state, and do it at one fell swoop. It won't work, and there's not the facilities, and you have to actually have the space and all that and funding to do it. So I'm focused on the that. Now, also on the 300% above poverty line below. I also, though, have a program called Maryland Matters that we're going to put in when I'm governor, which is akin to Teach for America, but on a earlier stage, so that people, that there are mentors. And I started my remarks about mentoring, and I think that's something that people want to do, and people will come out of colleges and so forth and enter this Maryland Matters to work with families in their homes, parenting, around parenting and developing cognitive skills for children before they get to pre-K. So they have the same advantages as every other child does in the state.
But the question was, should that funding be in the state formula like every other grade? So it doesn't become a battleground in the legislature.
It absolutely should be, and it will be, and it won't be a battleground. That's the great thing about a one-party state. And it's your party, so you're cool with it.
I have no party.
I know, you're
I'm
independent.
I'm Switzerland, right? I'm neutral.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard your stick before.
So then how important is full-day pre-K, do you think, for kids from low-income families, and how do you fund it? How are you going to fund it?
Well, I think it's essential. And the way you fund it is through the table gaming and through the reforming our tax structure, reforming our jobs culture, and getting businesses to come back into the city and back into our state.
So as a quick follow-up then, I mean, so what's the timeline for that? I mean, how long is it going to take for every child to have access to pre-K in the state?
For every child? I think that'll take more time.
From your perspective, whatever that
means. From my perspective, I think you want to focus on the underserved communities, the 300% above poverty line and below. You want to start that right away in January, the next session. We'll start getting the funding for that and making sure and taking it from the table gaming and put it in there. And then as we expand out, I think over time, you want to ultimately get to a full day, all day, pre-K voluntary system throughout the state. And, you know, if I were to give you a timeline, I'd be guessing. But, you know, certainly 5 to 10 year range.
I think it's time for a closing statement. You have the floor, Attorney General.
Well, thank you very much. So I went into a school here in Baltimore, and I was being walked around, and I said, I couldn't believe it. It looked like Lean on Me, the beginning of Lean on Me, the film for the older people in the room that have seen that. And I was walking and just seeing gang members and people, you know, it was just an unbelievable situation. I looked at the person I just met 30 seconds earlier and said to them, if a child came to this school, this is a high school, public high school here in the city, and I said, if a child came to the school and he or she wanted to learn, had blinders on and just wanted to learn, could they get a great education here? And the guy looked at me like I was nuts. He said, of course not. And it just occurred to me that it shouldn't matter what color your skin is, what your zip code is, that in some parts of our state you have access to a great education, and in other parts of our state you just don't have a chance. And for me, as in being in public service these last 22 years, fighting for people for fairness, this is just a fundamentally unfair situation. And so I think when you sign up to run for governor, and I was teasing about being the Baltimore candidate, but I have been in Baltimore, you know, for decades. I was a part season ticket owner for the Orioles before, you know, my opponent ever stepped in Maryland. And so I care about this city. I love this city. And it's been left behind, and we could do so much for the schools. It's funding on the outside, but it's also making sure that the good teachers are rewarded and that we reward and we give extra compensation for teachers who are willing to come into underserved areas and teach. And we should be pairing up senior teachers with younger teachers and making sure that every child – I remember Miss Kopp at Chevy Chase Elementary. And, you know, and she was the teacher that got to me. She was the teacher that made me want to learn. I ended up going to Yale because of lacrosse, but I also, you know, I got through there. And I attribute that in large measure to teachers like Miss Kopp, who were – I don't know what she was getting paid. I was just a kid. But I know that she cared about me. And I know that she cared about me not just to have me teach to learn some standardized tests, but she wanted me to learn how to learn. And that's, you know, and I think that's what we need to do. And I just want to thank you all for being here tonight, but also for caring so much about the Baltimore City educational system. And I look forward to being your partner in the years to come.
Thank you very much, Attorney General.
All right. Our final candidate of the evening is with us now, Delegate Heather Mazier. Delegate Heather Mazier has twice been named to the list of Maryland's 100 top women. She was elected to the Tacoma City Council in 2003, and since 2006 has represented District 20 from Montgomery County in Annapolis. Delegate Mazier has had more than 15 years of experience in policy experience from Capitol Hill to the county level and more. has focused on expanding health care for children, protecting reproduction rights for women, the environment, and technology jobs. Delegate Heather Mazier.
Delegate Mazier, welcome to the BEC Forum.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We're going to start with education funding. So Maryland has a state education formula that is designed to provide funding for schools to ensure all students will succeed regardless of where they live. It is based on the principles of equity and adequacy. Baltimore City Schools gets almost 70% of its funding from the state because the formula takes into account the city's more limited ability to contribute. Over the next 2 years, the education funding formula is going to be reviewed and updated as part of the adequacy study. This review process is to include taking into consideration the needs of children living in areas of high poverty and what they need to succeed. Your first question of the evening. What are your views about the upcoming education adequacy study and the principles of adequacy and equity in the formula as it relates to students across the state and here in Baltimore?
Thank you so much. And thank you for spending a portion of your evening with us tonight to have this conversation. It has been my honor for the entire time I've been in the General Assembly to engage with you here in Baltimore City with the Baltimore Education Coalition on a range of topics about transforming our communities. I believe that every one of our children has to succeed for our entire state to be successful. And our wealth formula is a critical component of that, particularly for the city. As we are digging into reviewing this wealth formula on the time frame that has been laid out in your question, I'd like to lay on top of that some other considerations. I've proposed in this governor's race that we bring about what I'm calling a Thornton 2.0 commission. It's coming back to the original ideas that were advanced under the Bridge for Excellence program in 2002 that became known as the Thornton Commission. And within that commission, we deal with a lot of issues, from wealth funding formulas and understanding and recognizing that there are more children than ever on reduced and free meals in our schools, that there is an ongoing number of people whose English is a second language, a range of factors that mean certain schools and certain school districts and communities need additional help from the state to have adequacy in their funding formulas. Whether it's that or educator pay, the geographic cost of education index, there are a number of factors that go into making sure we are adequately putting state investment into our school system, and having that Thornton 2.0 commission is one way that I view that. But let's also be clear. I view this as a holistic situation. We need to make sure that we take care of Baltimore and any community whose adequacy needs and poverty rates mean that there is more need for funding. But let's also hold out a hope that one day we don't have funding, the need for funding formulas. We shouldn't just be okay with continually accepting that some communities are forever going to be poor. Let's start attacking poverty issues. Let's start attacking poverty issues directly, straight on the head, on economic issues, not just raising the minimum wage, but having a living wage for people. Let's not just focus on tax relief for giant corporations, but middle class and families on fixed incomes. You put money in the hands of middle class families, we reinvest it in the economy to keep it going again. Whether it's our economic needs or our educational needs, we'll talk tonight about universal pre-K and after-school programs to investing in affordable higher education and supporting our historically black colleges and universities. When we have a vision for this state that is larger than just accepting that everything will be the way it's always been, that we just have to be okay with status quo, that on criminal justice reform, we shouldn't just be talking about how to be tough on crime. We have to shift the conversation on how we can be smart on crime. And when we start to do things like putting on the table, eliminating mandatory minimum sentences, which take away the discretion of a judge to be focused on what the true penalty of a crime should be. When we address our failed war on drugs, when we get serious about universal background checks for our guns.
Delegate Mazier. Thank you.
I thought she said 2 minutes remaining.
She did, but I need to refocus the question.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Now, I appreciate your passion. I want to ask you, and we agree, that we don't want to continue to have a funding formula in the future for the long run that has to recognize poverty. We are there with you. But until we get to that place, which is in our future, we all believe that, what is your proposal from now until there to ensure that the children have what they need until we are in that place?
Well, being governor is about setting priorities and building a budget around it. And I reject the notion that we somehow can't, within a wealth formula calculation, take care of a community like Garrett County, who in the most rural part of the state, under the current calculations, is calculated as a wealthy county and is losing resources that are important to their needs and their communities as well. Fixing the problem for Garrett County, though, doesn't have to take the money out of Baltimore City if what we're doing is coming up with proposals and solutions on how to put more money on the table to address the underlying problem. And the issues that I have been advancing in this campaign, the way that we raise revenue from our corporate tax approach to our failed war on drugs, the range of things that I was hoping to get into a little more detail on, gives us the resources to be able to have this conversation. And so I understand well and have fought for, because I'll tell you one thing that happens in Annapolis. Sometimes the jurisdictions are pitted against each other. And I have, on several occasions, way before I ever considered running for governor, stood on the side of Baltimore when people were complaining that Baltimore was getting too much money from this formula, and instead said, no, when we look at the formula and what it's based on and what it's intended to cover, Baltimore has the highest need, and we have to address the most acute problems first. And I'll get to some of the rest of that in the next question.
So the next area that we wanted to talk to you about is facilities, so school buildings. Baltimore City, as you know, has the oldest school buildings in the state, many of them having been built over 50 years ago, and are rated in poor condition. Baltimore Education Coalition worked very hard to pass the 21st Century School Construction Program that will fund the renovation or replacement of about one quarter of the school of Baltimore's decrepit school buildings, so about 35 of 136 buildings. Funding has not yet been identified to renovate the remaining 100 buildings, which have all been evaluated by professionals. They're rated in poor condition, many without air conditioning, science labs, other things they need. The question for you is, what steps would you take to address the other 100 city school buildings that are not covered under the current program, and what kind of funding streams would be used for this?
Thank you very much. And hats off to the Baltimore Education Coalition, the ACLU Education Reform Project, a whole range of advocates and parents and educators and students in this city that took your own future into your hands to demand better and more from Annapolis for your schools. I'll never forget the moment that I personally became aware of your situation and just personally heartbroken by what I saw. I was touring Holabird Academy. It was May of 2011. And I'm vice chair of education and economic development, so I was walking through the schools to have a conversation about school construction. And in Montgomery County, believe it or not, our roads aren't paved in gold. We also have school construction needs. We have mold remediation and overcrowding. But when I walked into the schools in the city and saw that kids can't drink out of the water fountains because of the lead pipes, that the toilets wouldn't flush, so there's no doors on the stalls. Just today in this school, at City Springs, the MSAs were conducted inside the gymnasium because of overcrowding, and the kids were wearing their coats because of how freezing cold it was. This is not an environment where our children can learn. And I could have gone home at that time and said, this is Baltimore's problem. I hope they figure out a solution. But that's not what I did. I worked with you. We came up with proposals and ideas. I co-authored an op-ed with Tom Wilcox from the Baltimore Community Foundation and the Baltimore Sun in October of 2011, highlighting a range of ideas that became a framework for the conversation of how we could get that $1 billion in the 2013 session. And within that framework are ideas on how we can get to phase two funding. First, Let's build on what has worked in other communities. In Iowa and Georgia, they've passed initiatives called the School Infrastructure Local Option, which gives local jurisdictions the opportunity to put to referendum a penny increase in the sales tax and an ability to hold on to that revenue for the dedicated purpose of building schools in that jurisdiction. In Iowa, where this has happened, it started out as a referendum that a handful of jurisdictions took up. And then when their schools got rebuilt and people were driving through their communities, they said, well, I'm kind of jealous. How'd they get these new school buildings? And then they'd realize that it was because the local jurisdiction took it on themselves to raise the revenue through that option. It turned out that every single county in Iowa has passed this provision now, and it's become a statewide provision. Georgia is on the way to doing the same thing. If it's working in Iowa and Georgia, it certainly can work in Maryland. Another approach that I have advanced is having conversations with our building and construction trades unions, our steam workers, pipe fitters, our carpenters, our electricians, and having a conversation about whether or not we can come up with a trade-off where in exchange for investing a portion of their pension fund into expanding the school construction authority, we do project labor agreements that guarantee when we're building these schools, we're using union labor and local labor to do the construction. There are ways for us to leverage resources from a variety of sources. One of the ideas that Transform Baltimore originally worked on were these school opportunity bonds, or if you want to get fancy, the 6320 funding authority that is allowed under federal IRS tax laws for a new way to generate bonding revenue that can give us the resources to do these big builds. And make no mistake about it, the reason why we have to do these big builds is because our schools are the anchors of our neighborhoods. They draw resources in. When we rebuild our schools, we are able to think big about co-locating daycare centers, opening up the gymnasiums for community use, having after-school programs and recreational activities available at our schools. When we come together and do this in one big build, we not only address the need for 21st century learning schools for learning centers for our children, we come up with approaches that are about improving and lifting up entire neighborhoods, entire communities, and turning around the middle class flight that has taken place in this city for way too long. This is one amazing city. The challenges and the opportunities here are absolutely amazing. We just have to have the political will to step up and take advantage of every opportunity that exists and invest in everything that is wonderful about Baltimore to help her live up to her full potential.
Delegate Bazier, I'm glad you're here with us tonight. Let me say that Baltimore has full-day kindergarten for all of its pre-K, for all of its kids who receive free and reduced lunch. That money doesn't come out of the state, doesn't come out of the city, comes out of the school budget for Baltimore City, because we know that that will they're ready for kindergarten and that participation helps working parents, and it's become a very successful formula in the city here. So the question is, your campaign has proposed phasing in expansion of state-supported kindergarten that would eventually lead to full K, universal pre-K and pre-K in the state. So full-day pre-K in the state, let me say. So the key question we've been asking everybody is, what's your view about putting per-pupil funding for pre-K into the state education funding formula the same way the state funds and puts in for every other part of our school systems?
I support that. That's a part of the vision for how I put the universal pre-K program together. May I go into some conversation about that?
Go ahead. You have time, please.
I mentioned earlier that being governor is about setting priorities and building a budget around those priorities. And there's no bigger priority for the Mazier Coates administration than acknowledging the achievement gap in our schools. We have had the number one schools for the last 5 years for some of the schools in our state. That is not a bragging right for all of our schools, and we won't rest until it is. But even in some of our best schools, across the board, we have had this stubborn and persistent achievement gap. It still matters in Maryland what your socioeconomic status is, what your race is, to determine whether or not you're going to be successful in school. And it doesn't have to be that way. We know that when we invest in 0 to 5 initiatives from birth to age 5, we can eliminate the disparities and allow all of our children to enter school ready to learn at the same pace. Now, you're going to hear sometimes that all the major Democratic candidates for governor have a similar plan for universal pre-K. And nothing could be further from the truth. Let's talk about this in terms of one of my favorite nursery rhymes, The Three Little Pigs. Let's consider the big bad wolf being the achievement gap that wants to huff and puff and blow the house down. There are three options for how this program can be built. One is going to build the house out of straw, one is going to build the house out of sticks, and the other is going to build the house out of bricks. I'm choosing to build the pre-K program out of bricks. It's going to cost more money, it's going to take a little more time, it takes more strategic and advanced thinking, but it will withstand all of the pressure from the big bad wolf. I am focused on not just covering pre-K for 4-year-olds from some low-income families. The straw version of this says that low-income 4-year-olds will get coverage, but universal is just too expensive. The sticks version of this plan says, well, we'll cover all the 4-year-olds, but only if Marylanders lose enough money at the casinos to pay for it. The brick version of this is a priority. It will be paid for. We have a dedicated funding source. We are going to end our failed war on drugs to pay for this. And part of the way that we are going to do this is not just to cover for 4-year-olds, but 3-year-olds. But what about from birth until you get into pre-K? We fixed the child care subsidy in this state because too many families don't have access to an affordable, nurturing, educational, structural environment for their children when they're going to work. We have a child care subsidy in our state that is so severely broken that only the poorest of the poor qualify. And up until this year, we had a 14,000-person waiting list for that subsidy. This year, it's only 600. It's not because we served 13,000 families. It's because the O'Malley Brown administration purged the waiting list and told them all they needed to reapply. A convenient thing to do in the middle of an election year. My program would fix the subsidy in the waiting list and expand the coverage to families earning as much as $55,000 a year. And then we invest in quality after school and summer initiatives. The O'Malley Brown administration huffed and puffed quite a bit about their support for the after school and summer opportunity program, passed a law to bring that program inside the office of the governor, and then for the last 8 years didn't devote one penny to it in the budget. Not one penny. I devote $70 million to quality after school and summer initiatives for our youth to serve 44,000 more kids in this state. And we have a dedicated revenue source to pay for all of it. These are the decisions that we have to come together and make. Do we accept options and proposals that on the surface sound good, but if you huff and puff and blow a little bit too hard, it all falls apart? Or are we going to invest in the bricks option that is a comprehensive, holistic view of how we address these issues that are facing our city, facing our state? There is one option in this race that is taking a very serious look about what our biggest, most challenging problems are and is putting real solutions on the table for you to make a decision to discomfort the status quo for a change and go with someone who's sticking up for you.
Delegate Mazier, so how important is full-day pre-kindergarten for children of low-income families? And very clearly, how do you fund it?
It's so important that I'm the only candidate in the race that has talked about covering all 4-year-olds for a full day, regardless of income, and for the fourth phase in, covering 3-year-olds from families that make $70,000 and less. And how I pay for it is to address our failed war on drugs. Our marijuana prohibition laws have been an absolute failure. They are enforced with racial bias, and they detract our law enforcement officers from focusing on more violent and serious crimes. And when we legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana, not only are we saving $280 million a year in our detention, incarceration, and court costs just for marijuana possessions, because we jail 23,000 people a year for this. That's the equivalent of the graduating class at College Park every year. We are the state that puts, we are number three in the nation for our marijuana possession arrests. If we legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana and treat it like alcohol and tobacco, which for adults, in terms of toxicity and alcohol, it is arguably no more harmless than that. We should treat it as such. We could generate $170 million a year in additional revenue. That's on top of the $280 million we save from our expenditures on the criminal justice side. And I devote 100% of the legalized tax and regulate portion of that revenue to our pre-K program, with the exception of an additional $4 million that we spend every year on an educational campaign to make sure that young people understand the impacts of this substance on a developing mind. We have to keep it out of the hands of our youth. For our youth, it is still a dangerous substance. But what drug dealer cards anyone for an ID? Our kids are already having access to it. Having a structured, regulated environment will improve the chances of keeping it out of the hands of youth, and we will also have an educational campaign
Excuse
to guarantee
me,
that.
Delegate Mazur, I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's time for your closing statement, and again, we want to be fair and make sure everyone gets the same amount of time, so if you can move on to your closing statement at this time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you for giving your time this evening to having an opportunity to see up close and personal the differences between the options that you have before you. Some people run for governor because they want the job. Other people run because they want to do the job. I have spent my entire career bringing people together to get big things done. Whether it was an initiative to cover 50,000 more uninsured children in our state, whether it was working across party lines to pass a family planning expansion to give 35,000 more low-income women in the state access to free family planning services, standing up for our environment, making sure that we don't do like every other state and frack first and ask questions later to disastrous consequences. Our vision for the future of this state is one that is about tackling every single one of our issues with renewed vigor and purpose, with new ideas, with bold approaches, to stand up and fight for what we believe in, and to give you an option to choose something other than the status quo. And I have a lot more to say than what I'm given time to say it in. So let me ask you to just go to www.heathermazur.com. All of the proposals I've advanced tonight can be found on that website. We are in this race to win it. We are the only campaign that's surging in the polls. Help us do this. I ask for your vote on June 24th. Thank you so much.